Americans are weary. The pandemic, the acknowledgement of racism in this country, and the presidential election have left so many of us aware of the feeling of being collectively traumatized. It's something Kiese Lehman has been writing about. He's a professor of English and creative writing at the University of Mississippi and an author of several books that confront and unpack trauma. Kiese and I spoke earlier, and I began by asking him some of the reasons he believes we're now having a mainstream conversation about trauma.
I mean, one of the things that's changed is we're using the word a lot on, you know, television. It's a word we see on 24-hour news. We're writing through it. And in my lifetime, I think we've suffered the most trauma that I've ever suffered in a four-year period. And we are acknowledging one of the things that connects us, sadly. And I think Trump and Trumpism made that abundantly clear.
Yeah, we're acknowledging it. So what's the next step? What do we do now that we're acknowledging it? That's the big question.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure what we do. I have some ideas. I think most of my ideas revolve around like the obliteration of normal or the obliteration of this desire to get back to normal. I think we have to understand that normal helped create this moment. And this moment is much more than a moment, right? Like, and so one of the things that I want to do is just make sure that like unchecked normal never happens again, right? Like I think this this desire to get back to normal is understandable, but I don't know that it's like, you know, the most just thing, the most equitable desire, or the most fair thing. So I think we just have to push ourselves to want to, as much as it, as easy it is to want us to get back to whatever we were before Trump, I think we have to realize that whatever we were before Trump helped create Trumpism and helped create sort of where we are. So that is an acknowledgement. Yeah. And then I think we have to do what some of us have been doing since birth, right? Which is lovingly fighting for radical fairness, holding ourselves accountable, which is the most important thing. And we have to fight faithfully, not just with hope, but faithfully. And I also just think we have to look forward to a future where equity is not just possible, but the new norm, while understanding the parts of the past that we all took part in that led to that norm being something we haven't seen yet. So we have to hold ourselves accountable and the nation.
Yeah. Is that what you're doing on a personal level?
I'm trying to. But, you know, the most important part of that work is acknowledging when we fail. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, I'm very critical of whoever holds that presidency. But I think one of the things that Trump did that is most harmful to me as a person and as an artist, as an educator, is that he modeled a resistance to regret.
A resistance to regret, Lehman explains, is also a resistance to revision, a resistance to saying I was wrong or I made a mistake. Lehman says acknowledging how we played a part in the current state of our country is an important part of healing.
There are lots of lessons in this Trump presidency. There are lots of lessons in this Biden win. There are lots of lessons every single day outside of politics. But I think they have to all be rooted in the desire to look back and to revise what you've done wrong yesterday to yourself and to other people. That's got to be at the root of any sort of movement toward equity that we have.
Mm-hmm. Is it also mourning and acknowledging the feelings of hurt and pain? I'm thinking Absolutely. We heard from some men in particular who say they were so moved to see President Biden crying during his farewell address from Delaware ahead of the inauguration, so much so that they started crying. And it felt like after 4 years, permission to feel. I was struck by that. And I was trying to come into an understanding for myself on why. But I think it's like permission to not hold up this toxic masculinity. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. When you said that initially, I just thought about Trump again, like modeling what we call toxic masculinity every single day on Twitter and on 24-hour news. And then I thought about the 75 million people who seemingly want that modeled even more, right? But what I think is really important is that it is crucial for us to see, and this goes against a lot of things I believe, like representational politics matters, but I think we have to build a representational politics not around people, but around emotions. And I think we definitely need to see more people in this country who are in positions of power sincerely empathize and feel. And so I just think, yes, like I cried, but you know, I've been crying these last 4 years. It wasn't new to me. But I do think we all, no matter how old we are, and I actually argue the older you are, and I would say particularly like cisgender men, we need to see more models of mushy masculinity.
Lehman recently wrote a piece in Vanity Fair about finding joy in the wreckage. And what he means by that is finding joy in places we least expect. For instance, when he watched the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, as horrified as he was, he also remembered that D.C. was the place his parents first met. It was a slice of joy, a memory that he had neglected by forgetting.
Like, my parents weren't together when I was born, for example, right? And I don't think about them ever being together because I could not find that memory, right? When I watched those white men go across that, mostly white men, you know, siege that Capitol, I thought about my parents being together in D.C., right? I never, ever thought about that before. Mm-hmm. Like, they were in love at one point. So for me, that wreckage, like, served as a portal to a memory, to a duo of people who were not in love for a long time, but were in love and were radical and were, like, you know, inspired by Malcolm X and were questionable of Martin, but loved Martin just as well. And so for me, it's looking in spaces that we've been told not to look for joy and finding joy, even if it doesn't fit the shape or the sound or the scent that we're used to. And I just think that might sound like whatever, you know, like goofy, but you know what? Like, we need more goofy in this country. And that's where I am.
More goofy in this country, right? Yeah.
Yes.
That's powerful. It's really powerful, too. You referenced yourself as an artist, and it made me think about this conversation I recently had with Wendell Pierce, where he talked about the importance of art, how it serves as a reflection in which we look at ourselves, he says, decide what our values are, look at our inadequacies, and then go out and act on them. I'm wondering how you're using art during these times.
That's a great question, Tanya. You know, art is sort of how I breathe, is how I pray. So art for me, particularly like reading and writing, is literally how I've made it through the pandemic. I've tightened up my practice. I used to have a practice that I steadfast to for 20 years. I changed my writing practice during this pandemic. And I am privileged to do that because I have, you know, I don't have to worry about my next meal. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that what I'm saying is something that is true for every human in this country at all.
Yeah. There's also music.
Absolutely. Like, I've been listening to a lot of Aretha Franklin, especially like her rendition of Holy Holy from Marvin Gaye. It reminds me of my grandmother. She still cries when she hears that song. So that's been on repeat. And I've just been, like, you know, making my own music. And I don't feel comfortable talking about that because I'm such a terrible musician and terrible singer. But I've been trying to create some songs for myself.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also accessible. I'm thinking about folks who don't think of themselves as artists, but being able to tap into art as a way to express themselves during this traumatic moment in our history, during this time when so many of us are mourning, collectively mourning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I just think that collective mourning is what we need to continue to call what we're experiencing, like, right? And I think we've been experiencing this. Like, my grandmother would argue she doesn't remember when she hasn't been collectively mourning. But I think collective mourning and unity are two different things. And I'm much more interested in what happens if we collectively mourn. Because I think unity or any sort of unification that comes before acknowledgement of all of the colors of collective mourning is not a unification that can hold its weight. So I think the collective mourning definitely needs to precede any sort of talk or movement toward unity.
Kiese Lehman is a professor of English and creative writing at the University of Mississippi. He's also an author of several books. Thank you so much, Kiese.
Thank you so much, Tanya. I appreciate this.